I've got the memory of an elephant. I remember one time I went to the zoo and saw an elephant. I was disappointed to find that Dunkirk wasn't actually a biography of William Shatner. I accidentally kicked my dog early and it bit me on the bollocks. My mate said, it's karma. I said, no, if anything, it's even more angry. I tell you what always catches my eye, short people with umbrellas. I put on a lot of weight, so I rang up Weight Watchers. I said, it's an emergency, can you send somebody round? And they said, yes, we can, we got loads of them. I was actually thrown out of Weight Watchers for making sarcastic comments at the weekly weigh-in. As you can imagine, I accepted the decision with huge grace, because they threw her out as well. I was watching TV, the announcer said there's a documentary about the clitoris on the red button, but I couldn't find it. I was in a fancy lingerie shop. I said, are these knickers satin? He said, no, they're new. I didn't know what to get my little niece for Christmas, so I asked my sister what she's into. Apparently, at the moment, she's mad about frozen stuff, so I got her some oven chips and peas. It's been a tough week. I got myself a memory foam mattress, and now it's trying to blackmail me. As a child, I was made to walk the plank. We couldn't afford a dog. I went on a positive thinking course. It was shit. You would be. And it was half empty. The area in Nando's between the front and back door is called a peri-perineum. What I like most about that joke is that people who know what a perineum is usually haven't heard of Nando's. Ironically, there's only a very small overlap between the two. The doctor told me to lose some weight. I said, how? He said, don't eat anything fatty. I said, what, pies, chips, that sort of thing? He said, no, just don't eat anything fatty. Old lady names are very much back in fashion at the minute, like Lily or Elsie or Rose, and we wanted something like that for our daughter, but we couldn't decide, so in the end we just called her Nan. So we should grow into it.
People ask me all the time, so Rich, how did you end up becoming a comedian? And I always say, why do you say end up, like I made a mistake? Kind of a polite conversation you have with a tramp. So, fella, how'd you end up in a skip? That's the most fantastic job in the world, right? You make people laugh, you, fella, with all that stress on your face. Look at you, sitting in the front row trying to get the jokes before anyone else. How desperate are you for comedy, my friend? Well, you people bricks put... Oh, I'm sorry, what? I wasn't expecting a response. Do you work?
I'm a student.
A student, all right. No more questions, Your Honor. It's very easy. No heavy lifting. Yeah? Why don't you think about being a comedian? What are you studying?
History.
History. That goes back a long time, doesn't it? Why don't you try American history? A couple hundred years. Boom, you're done. Listen, here's the thing, all right? You just say intelligent things stupidly. That's all there is to being a comedian. Or maybe it's stupid things intelligently. It's not rocket surgery. I'll tell you that right now. That's what I get asked all the time. So I bet you were the class clown. Were you the class clown? Screw you. Why would you suggest I took a childhood disorder and turned it into a career, you prick? No one ever says to a hooker, were you the class whore? I bet you were the class whore, weren't you? Let the mystery be. I love watching Brits snap. That is the greatest thing in the world. When a Brit snaps, you don't even know they've snapped. It's not like Americans who take out 8 or 9 people with a high-powered rifle because they're social animals. Brits snap, and you go, 2 hours later, thinking, I think that guy snapped while I was talking to him. At that point where he crushed the pint glass with his hand, he was a bit pissed off. That's why when it comes to a war on terror, something we invented, the war on terror, because Brits would never have a war on terrify, because what's not terrifying to Brits? Everything. They just don't show it, right? Brit, you've had giants plucking your daughters out of villages a couple thousand years ago. Look that one up, history boy. It's true. So the basic British reaction to anything terrifying is this. How much is this going to cost? You can't really terrify. That's why I'm pretty sure the war, the whole terrorism thing, I think the terrorists have just kind of given up on Britain, because what can they possibly do, right? Listen, I would never compare the scopes of tragedy of, say, the World Trade Center to the bombs that blew up in London, but the reaction is completely different, right? America still has its entire culture of fear about terrorism. It's basically manifests itself by terror alerts being scrolled across the bottom of the TV screen by color. No explanation whatsoever. Just today's terror alert is orange. Now back to our show. What the hell is that? What does that mean? Orange, that's hunting accidents, roadworks, right? That's not good. It means be very, very aware of terror. So dwell on it now and then. Whereas in Britain, they blow up the buses in London. Next day, people are back at the bus stop waiting for the bus, right? And complaining about it because they're Brits. Bus is late. I mean, it's late. The one yesterday blew up. Yeah, well, that was yesterday. Today's today. I live in the present, and the bus is late. That's why when you watch a Brit snap, right, you got to get really close to them. They'll pick a high street and just corkscrew for a while. That's not even knowing what direction to corkscrew. What direction is corkscrew anyway? This is bullshit. And then you get too close, and then you get sucked into the vortex, right? Are you okay? That moment when a Brit truly snaps, and it looks like this. I'm going to write a letter. That's it. I've been pushed to the brink, you bastard. Nobody treats me like this, you son of a bitch. Huh? I'm not emailing this. I'm writing this. Wait till you get that tomorrow. Big red pillar box right in the mail. Postal strike.
Oh, yes, you know what I love about London Town is we welcome all the people from all around the world, innit? I bet you he's got people from overseas in the house tonight. Overseas people, show me some love. Loads and loads and loads. What about over there? I saw a few people who was from overseas. Where are you from, guys? Australia. Welcome the Australians. There's so many Aussies in London. We even got nicknames for each other. That's crazy. You call us Poms, innit? Yeah. We call you racists. Welcome, you legend, my man. Do you miss it out there, all the beaches and the barbecues and all that? Yeah, probably about time you pissed off home, innit? Jokes, 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 you legend. It's just banter. Do you know what I mean? We'll have a drink in the bar afterwards? Yes, promise you'll serve me first, though. This isn't this nice, all the different foreign people. Who else has we got on the ass? Yeah, legend over there. You're proud of where you're from. Where are you from? Wales. You idiot. They get well wound up when we call them sheep shaggers, innit? And the why you don't just stop it, but there you go. Welcome, geese. I've been to Wales. It's a nice place, isn't it? It's even like a time difference, ain't there, which I couldn't believe. Yes, I was in Swansea. They're about 8 years behind. Welcome to Wales, man. Who else has we got in? And it's nice.
Kenya.
What's that, you legend?
Kenya.
Kenya? Oh, welcome, you legend. I've got African relatives of my own. I feel like there's a bond there. I never knew I had African relatives until I got an email out of the blue about 2 weeks ago. Welcome. Welcome, welcome. I love it all, man. All the different cultures, all the different things. Different accents, ain't that fun? Everyone's got different accents. I hear different accents, I think of different things. I hear like Australian accent, I'm thinking sport. You know, I hear Italian accent, I'm thinking food. I hear Indian accent, I think I'm about to be put on hold. Welcome all of yous, man. Welcome all of yous. Because that's the thing about London, we do welcome ya. You know, come along, have a giggle. I say there's only one day every year when we don't welcome the foreigners. When we let all the frustrations on the foreigners out of the system. Just one day every year in London. London's, you know what I'm talking about, innit? That one day every year, we close down all the roads in the centre of London. And thousands of people chase after these five Kenyans. And a load of people in wheelchairs. It's not nice.
Naked or almost naked pictures online to show how confident we are. And in all the comments, other women will be like, you are so brave. Well, I really just think that means not a model. Also, it's not brave. There's no soldier looking down at that picture being like, oh, what a brave lady. You know, a man posts a naked picture, he just loses custody of his kid. And if showing your weird body's brave, then the guy that masturbated in front of me on the subway is very brave. Because he had a real weird body. And he was making weird faces. He might be the bravest man I know. But that's the thing, we're supposed to care so much about our bodies, us women, you know? And there's even campaigns that we should love our bodies and be confident in our bodies. Or we could just stop caring about it. Because you know who doesn't care about their bodies? Men. You know what men are? Successful. Men are presidents, men are CEOs. You've never heard a CEO go, I want to get profits up and keep costs down and love me for me. 3 p.m. we're going to have a meeting about how I can accept the fact that I have my mother's thighs. You know who should care about their bodies? Men. You have weird bodies, men. You're gross. Your balls are gross. I've never seen a guy be like, oh, I can't wait to get his pants off and see that weird bag of stuff between his legs. What is it? It's like when you go to a haunted house and you stick your hand in a jar, you're like, please be grapes. Balls seem like a real god whoopsie. It's like when you're putting other furniture and you got a couple leftover screws, and you're like, well, those were supposed to go somewhere. I guess I'll hang them from a satchel. Even the name sounds like a mistake. What are you gonna call them? Scrotum. Okay. This is how you knew God didn't care about balls at all. Everything else important, he covered in bone. Balls, he was like, let them fly. You are so lucky we get our faces near them. If a woman puts your balls in her mouth, you should pay her a lot of money. And not in like a prostitute way, in like a, I don't know how else to say thank you. This is a very nice thing you just did to me. And you didn't get any pleasure out of it. There's not a single woman that's like, that's what does it for me. You are more of a saint than Mother Teresa for that. There's no way she ever did it. Over. I'd put paint on my face just to leave my home. And you guys get to walk around those wrinkly, dangly bags of crap. You should have to put makeup on them. At the very least, googly eyes. I don't know if that'd be better or worse, it'd be fun. He's happy, he's sad. He lost his boner. Calling our boobs saggy, your balls are saggy. You should wear a bra. And you make it fancy. All those women clapping, they meant yours.
But I have developed a new hobby. Some of you probably already do this. I've started listening into people's conversations on the bus and the train. It's quite entertaining. And I was listening not long ago to two old ladies, and they were talking about what they would do if they were men for a day. And I thought, this is going to be brilliant, because pensioners are, by definition, bonkers. But I went out to lunch with a couple of my friends, and I thought, well, I'll ask them the same question. So my first friend, I said, what would you do if you were man for a day? Without even thinking, she just went, I'd have a wank. Sounded like she needed to. She sounded awfully tense. But these old ladies, different generation to me and my friends, in their 80s, and one of them just said, Edith, what would you do if you're a man for a day? The other one said, no, in my luck, I'd get a Tuesday. And what can you do on a Tuesday? My second friend, I said, what would you do if you're a man for a day? She just said, I just do everything. And I thought she meant like in a sexual way. And I said, is that what you mean? Like you just do everything. And I said, is that what you mean? She went, no, no. Just all the little jobs round the house. But I've been trying to go on a diet. I'm not really very successful. But I find that whenever I go shopping and I can't get into things, you know, when you try clothes on and you're the size you weren't expecting to be, I just come home and I put on a song, and the song is Big Girls Don't Cry. You know the song? There's a couple of versions of it. Big girls don't cry. Such a load of rubbish that, isn't it? Big girls don't cry. Yeah, they do. Cry because they're fat, cry because they can't get a boyfriend, and they cry because there's no trifle left. But I was on holiday in Spain last year, and I'm bragging, I know, and outside the hotel was a lovely pool, and I wanted to go in the pool, of course I did, but I'm not overly confident with my figure in a swimming costume, and I was watching the women who were walking in the pool, and these were like tiny, you know, these wafer thin, tiny women. And I thought, I'm not going to walk in with one of them. If I walk in with one of them, people are going to think I've bloody eaten one. And I wouldn't anyway, because there's no meat on them. So what I decided to do instead is just to walk in with the children, because kids are all really fat these days. If I walk in the same time as a 9-year-old boy who's got bigger tits than me, nobody's looking at me anymore. But like I say, I don't have kids, and most of my friends don't have kids, but I think if you ask any woman who doesn't have kids, what would worry them about having kids would always be childbirth. It's quite a reasonable thing to worry about childbirth. From what I understand, it changes your downstairs, doesn't it? It changes your downstairs. I quite like my downstairs the way it is, thanks very much. Certainly don't want a bloody extension. But it's bound to change though, isn't it? Because you're forcing a person out. That's what you're doing. You're forcing a person out. I've never forced a person out. I forced a couple in. With a shoehorn.
And when I go back to America, man, we're not good at taking the piss out of ourselves. We're a younger country. We haven't learned that skill yet. That's a very advanced thing y'all do. We ain't worked that out yet. You know, in America, we used to feeling one emotion at a time, you know? And just, you know, we get mixed up like that. It's just, in America, too, we love catchphrases. We love slogans. You know, we love stuff like that. And we found a way for justification to sound like empowerment. That's right. We have phrases like, be true to yourself, follow your heart, follow your dream. There was a movie a few years ago called Batman Begins, and it had one of them catchphrases, and Americans loved it. To conquer fear, you must become fear. Well, how the hell you do that? And it's just a way for Batman to justify being violent. I can take that same phrase and justify whatever I want. If I gain too much weight, I can justify it by going, to conquer fat, you must become fat. Man, I saw a politician on the news today, MP, talking about it'll be good if Tony Blair becomes president of the European Union because a Brit will be in there. And how dare anybody in Britain go against that? Well, How about the best man for the job? How about that? How about that? And like, I know that kind of thinking because I grew up with that. I was always taught that I had to support every black person no matter what they did. So that meant I tried for years really hard to support Don King and Robert Mugabe. And it's hard. It's hard. I tried. I swear to God, I tried, man. A few years ago, I was watching Wimbledon and Serena Williams playing. And I'm not a fan, but I admire her game. She got a strong game, and not just the physical, but the psychological. Every time she hits the ball, right, she makes this grunt. It's like this, And that's a hell of a psych job to do on your opponent. Every time you hit the ball, you release this guttural grunt that's like, It's like what you're saying is, with every fiber of my being, I'm trying to kill you! Imagine playing somebody in checkers like that. A couple of years ago, I was watching Serena Williams play, and I was with one of my buddies, black dude, and she was doing the whole, and he leans over and he says, you know that grunt she does? I said, yeah. What she's actually doing is releasing 200 years of black American anger. For real? He said, black American anger is one of the most potent angers in the world. And that's why she hits the ball so hard, and that's why she be whooping them white girls like that. I was like, oh, okay. So a couple of weeks later, after this Russian girl beat her, I couldn't help but mess with my friend a little bit. I was like, wow, 200 years of black American anger don't seem to have nothing on 70 years of frustration with communism, does it? Black American anger, try a childhood with no toilet paper.
We need to bring back a sense of consequences for our actions. In this world, there are no more consequences for actions, yeah? And what I'm talking about, if there's no consequences in this life, what we need to do is bring back to Britain a simple sense of hell. The idea, if we screw up in this life, right, we will burn in sulfur for all eternity in the next life. Now, this is quite a tough sell, right? You don't like that idea, do you? Right, but hear me out, this is a good idea. We've got any Christians present, I need your assistance. Any Christian people here this evening? Yeah, yeah, in the pink shirt. What's your name, son?
Josh.
Fantastic. You a Christian? So you understand the idea of redemption, eternity, yeah? Resurrection, eternity in particular. And I do too. I understand the notion of eternity because I went to church on Sunday. Let me tell you this, that service went on forever. If it took me an hour to open a bottle of wine, I'd be drummed out of business. Now, the point is this. Take home a packet of crisps. Get on with it. We need to bring back to now. The problem with the idea of hell is no one's frightened of it. Now, I'm going to describe hell for you now, and none of you are going to bat an eyelid, right? And while your body's boiling in mouldering in the grave, we'll take your soul and boil it in boiling oil for 1,000 millennium. Then after that, 2 sulphurous demons, emissaries of Satan himself, will come along, pull out your kidneys and set fire to them on the red-hot coals of hell itself. Then after this, another demon will come along, pull out your eyeballs, stick them on a red-hot poker, burn them on the hot coals of hell, and stick them up your arsehole, and they'll come out of your own mouth with your shit on it. And this will go on forever. So you're not bothered by that, are you? In fact, most of you are laughing at it, huh? In fact, most of us, being British, are thinking, well, come on then! Call yourself the devil! And that's the interesting thing about hell, isn't it? When you describe it, when someone describes hell, it tells you everything you need to know about that person, right? And what he's like and what his people are like. And I describe hell then in a normal British accent, which tells you that we, the British, are stoic, tough people who could take absolutely bloody anything. And that's the interesting thing about hell. It tells you about the people telling you about it. Hell, in a French accent, for instance, sounds like a recipe.
And as the body is lying down on the worms inside the flesh, we take out the soul and place it in very hot oil for a long time. Then, once it is tender, 2 demons come together at once, remove the kidneys and place them on the hot coals with a little white wine vinegar, some sea salt, and cook them till they're brown on the outside, but still pink in the middle. Then after this, we take the eyeballs, place them on the hot coals, cook them till crunchy on the outside, runny in the middle, on the hot poker, stick them up the arse, they come out the mouth with the shit on. It is delicious. Absolutely delicious.
Okay, you see? Perverts! Perverts, basically, yeah?
Hell. Hell in a Dutch accent sounds like a pretty good stag do, doesn't it? Hey, and while your body is lying down, we'll take you to the hottest place you can imagine. Imagine the hottest place you can go, yeah? Now go even hotter, and two demons will come together and rub oil all over your body. Two demons together at once, and then you will take out your kidneys. Oh, your hot kidneys. And place the kidneys in a hot place and cook the kidneys till they're hard, until your kidneys are hard, and then take out your eyeballs and stick them in your bum hole. And this will cost you 45 euros.
Hey, how are you doing? Sounds like an agreeable weekend.
I was such a fat kid. My mother used to buy bathing suits with blowholes in them. It was just... But my parents... I don't want to go into my childhood here because it's wrong. My parents hated me, okay? We're all going to hear the story, aren't we? Well, my parents hated me too. My parents, all I ever heard growing up is, why can't you be like your cousin Sheila? Why can't you be like your cousin Sheila? Sheila had died at birth. They just hated me. Whenever we go like in front of a street, each parent would take my hand, hold our hand, we're crossing the street, and then they'd swing me into the traffic. They used to say, take candy from strangers. Ask the funny man in the raincoat, does he own a van? I had a very bad childhood, and that's because, and I'm sure none of you give a damn, but I was the only Jewish kid, this is the absolute truth, growing up in an all-Catholic neighborhood. You know what that's, the Irish people, only Jewish kid in a Catholic neighborhood. You know what that's like? You were all doing Hail Marys, I was doing Hail Murrays. I mean, it was just, no Christmas tree? No Christmas tree. Do you know what that's like when you're the only kid without a Christmas tree? Because everybody has Christmas trees. And nowadays, it's like, well, we do it for all faiths. That's such bullshit. Yeah, we walk into an office building, and there's a Christmas tree, and there's a menorah. Bullshit. The Christmas tree goes up, 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 up. There's like a little shitty menorah with two orange lights and some angry Puerto Ricans lit backwards. I mean, yes. Juan, you lit those lights backwards. Fuck you, you killed our Lord. I mean, it is just... So, I'm at the age where I figure, screw it, I'm gonna have a Christmas tree. I got the biggest Christmas tree I got a two-story high Christmas tree. I put everything you could think of on that. Up, 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 gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. On the bottom, I got the manger. I got the whole goddamn thing going there, the wise men, the sheep. The only thing is, I have the baby, but I'm Jewish. I got him a nanny. It was just, oh yes. And I redressed Mary. She didn't look good. That stupid thing over her head, come on. I put her in a Chanel suit, Manolo Blahniks, and a Louis Vuitton pocketbook. You're the mother of God. Look it. It is just... Am I wrong? If she had looked like that, she would have gotten into the inn. Yes. The point is, it's about looks. Mary, she looked good. She would have done better. Mother Teresa... Oh, don't give me, oh, Mother Teresa, if she had looked better, she'd be a saint by now. Was she a bow wow? Yes, did she need electrolysis? Let's talk to each other here. Even lepers were throwing their fingers at her. Here, get out of here. Because it is all about looks. This is my message, Great Britain. This is my message. Looks count, education. Looks count. I have no sex appeal, and it has screwed me up for life. Peeping Toms look in my window, pull down the shade. You have no idea. My gynecologist examines me by telephone. It is just...
I have a theory that masturbation is a kind of summoning spell for your own rational mind. Because we're all so driven by hormones and by desire. Sometimes you've got to have a wank to speak to your real self. You go, oh, I should have shagged my ex one last time. I'll text her, I'll meet her, I'll shag her. And then you come and a little voice comes on in your head that goes, yeah, don't do that, mate. You've got to be careful with jokes, haven't you? Because not everybody's got a sense of humour. I remember when I first realised not everybody's got a sense of humour. I was 13. I was at school and we were doing a class on stereotypes. The teacher was a really good guy. He's just talking about how stupid stereotypes are. And he was talking about a stereotype that day that's so old-fashioned and so Scottish that you definitely won't have heard it. Have you ever heard the stereotype that deaf people are really strong? That was a genuine thing when I was growing up. Deaf people, particularly deaf and dumb people, were believed to be really strong. And the teacher said, think how stupid that is. Have you ever seen a deaf contender for the heavyweight championship of the world? And me, age 13, I put my hand up and I went, there was one, sir, but he was disqualified for punching after the bell. And nobody laughed. And I knew right then that life was going to feel pretty long. You've got to have a bit of leeway with jokes, haven't you? I can't write jokes for the average person, can I? The average person is Chinese. So I'm from Glasgow, a city where people think that hepatitis B is a fucking vitamin. To explain Glasgow's attitude to you, this happened to me recently. I was having a wee snooze in a park because my career's been going really well lately. I was having a wee doze under a tree and a guy came up to me and he went, do you know your problem? You're fucking unapproachable. Glasgow's like an entirely negative city. I went to a coffee shop one time. Two middle-aged women sat across from me and they started to moan as they sat down about how long they thought the coffee was going to take. So nothing had happened and they were both angry. Coffee turned up and the first one takes a sip and goes, that's not very good, is it? And the second one takes a sip of hers and goes, I don't even like coffee. I think English people don't really understand Scottish attitudes. You think that we all just want to see the English football team get beaten, but actually a lot of us would much rather see the team plane crash into an oil refinery. I enjoyed reading about Sam Allardyce. I didn't realise English football had a corruption problem. I thought the only problems in English football were racism, sexism, homophobia, match fixing, gambling, sexual assaults, and the failure to perform at major tournaments.
Start by thanking the BBC for letting me be on the show. It's like really awesome that they did. I mean, it doesn't pay that well, but it's just really cool to be here. And they've been so generous. They put me up in a hotel right next to a casino in the city, and they didn't have to do that. I'm not criticizing the BBC. It's not their responsibility to know that I have a gambling addiction because it's about self-knowledge. And when I go to the casino, I only bring the equivalent of $100 to gamble with because I know I could afford to lose that. And I bring $25 for food in case I get hungry and $800 for bus fare in case I forget something and have to go home a couple hundred times. It's quite a long flight out here. And of course, I didn't get to board the airplane first because I don't travel with small children. The people who do travel with small children, they go on before anybody else. It's a nearly universal airline policy, and it's totally unfair. I mean, it's not fair at all. Never mind that I've spent the better part of a quarter of a century flying on the same airline, trying to earn enough status, enough loyalty, that maybe I could board the airplane first. Never mind that. Because that guy right over there made a single bad decision 3 years ago. So roll out the red carpet for His Majesty. And I'm not having to go at kids or parents. In fact, it's in defense of children. Little kids don't want to be jammed on the airplane right away. Small children do not enjoy air travel. And they've been making this abundantly clear for as long as I can remember. In fact, the airline should reverse the policy. They should say, small children stay at the airport till the last minute. They should say, anybody without small children, you may now board the airplane first, that you might enjoy a short moment of zen. Then the attendant would guide us like, okay, everybody just breathe in and release. Okay, here they come. I think I'm ready for this. But I also want to admit, in the interest of being open-minded, that I don't know why the kids got aboard first. And maybe there's a really good reason why the kids got aboard first that I don't know about, because I don't get to go on there with them. So I don't know what they do in there. I mean, maybe they got to do like a pre-flight sound check. I'm serious. Maybe they get on the airplane and they're like, wah! Is that good in the back? Can you hear that? Is that sufficiently piercing? Okay, I'm almost ready to let them on. I just want to do a couple seat-kicking warm-ups real quick here first. Check my distance. Get the volume up on that iPad. Turn the volume up on that iPad real good. I want people on the ground to hear me playing Angry Birds. You guys ever worry about the world? I get worried. I watched a documentary recently about how much the pollution from humans is destroying the environment. And after I watched that, I was so upset, I couldn't even talk. I just had to go for a really long drive by myself. And just think about shit. Alone in my Winnebago. Windows down, air conditioning up. A little hairspray. Because when I'm looking good, I'm feeling good.